The gloves are off. So listen, look, just in case people are wondering what the hell is Ami Malik doing wearing glasses, these are my blue blockers because it's late in the evening. And I have to thank you, Andreas, for coming all the way out here in Buckinghamshire, long drive. I bet you're tired. The first thing you said when you came was like, can I have a coffee, straight black? So, I mean, it must be pretty grueling being on the campaign trail.
I would say it's a little bit tiring and tedious, but I'm enjoying it, honestly. It's literally having the time of my life doing it at the moment.
Yeah. I love it. So listen, Andreas, what is your, tell me your name. And like every name has a story. Tell me where it comes from. Yeah. And all about you.
Yep. So my name is Andrea Christofi Michli. I was named after my grandfather. He has the exact same name. My dad has pretty much the same name. His name is Christofi Andrea Michli.
You're Greek.
Yeah, as you can tell. It's a very Greek name. Yeah, Cypriot. I'm Greek Cypriot. I'm also Turkish Cypriot. So I am what you call a mixed kebab.
Oh, I love it. I'm definitely a mixed kebab.
Yeah.
Oh, you know what? I love Greece. I've not actually been to Greece proper or Cyprus, but I've been to Corfu twice. And I loved it. And you know what? I get really upset about? And I know a lot of Greek people. I worked under two Greek surgeons. Haralumbas, Haralumbas. Haralambidis, Haralumbas, and Panas Thomas.
Yeah.
And I believe they were both Greek Cypriots, you know, and in North London. So I was training underneath them, and they're hardworking and they're brilliant. And I worked with other Greeks as well. And I've had some Greeks in my jiu-jitsu club. And, you know, when you go out to Greece, what you realize is Greeks are hardworking and Greeks are not lazy. And, you know, this idea here in the West that Greeks are lazy and, you know, corrupt and they deserve what they got because they are the way they are. It's so not true, man.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't even really heard that one, to be honest. I guess it depends what part of town you're from, really, isn't it?
Yeah, no, but you know when the financial crisis hit Greece?
Oh, right, yeah.
And it was like, oh, yeah, they don't, you know, they were reckless with their money and they're you know. No, it wasn't. It was the banks took advantage, gave loans and basically engineered, you know, state theft, you know, of their resources and stuff.
I could talk about that stuff all day long.
Really? So am I not right?
No, you are right. You are. I'm just saying I could literally, this is my area of expertise. I'm actually a fully qualified chartered accountant. So that's what I studied at university. That's what actually sort of opened up my eyes to the whole sort of agenda.
Elevator pitch. So tell me about it. So what did they do?
You mean my story of where it sort of all started or?
No, with the whole Greek economy and how they crashed it and everything.
Yeah,
all the state assets.
You could look back in history and that's happened quite a few times with Greece. It's not like a new thing, if you know what I mean, so to speak. It's happened many times in history. It's happened with a lot of countries as well. I mean, it's happened here in the UK, just a different way. I don't know if you remember the sort of credit crunch 2008.
Yes.
Very, very similar concept, you know.
What about COVID? That was a grand theft.
It is. It's a grand theft of our freedoms. Yeah. I mean, money itself is a theft of our freedoms, I would argue. You know, money itself is just a form of control. You know, you ask a lot of people, what is money? Most people can't. I'd say most people don't have a sort of coherent answer to what that is. You know, they'll say it's a way to sort of like pay people, whatever. It's really not. If you boil it down, money is a form of control.
Absolutely. And most people don't know it's the fiat money system that's literally printed out of nothing.
Yeah, since I think it was like 1931 or something like that.
It
sort of dibbled and dabbled and it got to 1931 and then it completely came off the gold standard. And it might as well say, I promise to pay the bearer the sum on demand 10 unicorns, because literally that is all it's worth. It is not worth anything.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Debt-based economy.
Debt-based fiat economy. And I think a lot of what we're seeing today, including the pandemic, is that they know the Ponzi scheme's coming to an end. There's going to be the mother of all crashes. And how do they still stay on top on the other side while we all suffer? I think that's part of the problem. But anyway, let's get away from all of that monetary thing and geopolitics and God knows what else. Look, you're sitting in front of me. You are a specimen of a man.
Oh, stop it. You're making me blush.
You know, you're bulging out of that shirt. Either it's very tight or you've got massive muscles. So you run gyms as well, don't you? You own several gyms and run them.
I own one gym, yeah. It's called Zone Gym in North London. Most people know about it. It's a very sort of famous bodybuilding gym. It's actually quite famous because of what I'd done through the COVID lockdowns. You know, I kept it open. Government told us close. I said, no, didn't.
So, I mean, tell me about that. So how did this accountant end up owning a gym? And you were quite famous because in lockdown, everyone had to shut up shop, which is bizarre. McDonald's can stay open, but people can't go to the gym. You have to stay indoors and not get any natural sunlight. I mean, everything that is healthy and good for you, we were told not to do. And everything that was unhealthy, they told us to do. That was a bit bizarre.
The whole thing was bizarre. You know, you couldn't even try to make sense of it, even if you tried to. It was just, it got to a point for me where I realized, you know, even if I tried to make sense, I couldn't of it. And then when I sat down, I can't remember at what point it was. And I just realized, you know, I can't carry on like this. I can't carry on like this and call myself a man. I feel like my integrity as a man is just under attack right now. You know, for me to just listen to what Boris Johnson, the government's telling me, that is almost insulting my grandfather's name that I carry.
But listen, Bojo is a really nice, cuddly prime minister who cares about us. Like, don't you trust him?
I don't think he knows his left hand from his right, to be honest. He, you know, he's just a puppet in a bigger show.
What do you mean by as a man? I'm really intrigued by that. I like hearing that. What do you mean as a man, I couldn't take this anymore? What does that mean to you? Because I think men are under attack these days. It's not cool to be a man. And it's not, you know, it's just not. And I think a lot of the problems we see today, because we don't have real men.
I would 100% agree with you there. You know, this sort of attack on man, these woke ideologies that are just floating about all over the place, and people are just falling for them left, right, and center, and they're just forgetting that they are men. Like, you know, you have to understand, as a man, you have certain morals to abide by, certain integrities, and if you lose even just one of those morals, I mean, you can't call yourself a man.
Right, listen, I'm a bit distracted. I'm a bit confused right now. Well, I'll tell you why. I'm sussing out, while you're answering that question, would you make a really good villain or a hero? I'm not sure. I think you could be both. With that with that deep voice. God, that's a good voice you've got, man. Seriously. And I don't know, like, how do you see yourself in the world? Are you a villain or are you the hero?
It is so funny you say that. Honestly, for like the last, you know, 4 years, I was like, I've been labeled the villain, the bad guy and all of that. And then all of a sudden, you know, but especially by my local council, Haringey, you know, I've had a lot of, you know, legal battles with them, persecution, prosecution, everything.
Are you a drug dealer? Or were you a drug dealer?
Oh, they might as well call me a drug dealer, terrorist, everything, you know. I was like the bad guy, the villain. And then all of a sudden, I got a certificate from the mayor of Haringey the other week, and I am a Haringey hero now, apparently.
You are kidding! See, this is what I'm talking about!
I'm a hero. And I tell you what, I haven't changed anything. I haven't done anything different. I'm still the exact same person I was 4 years ago, 3 years ago, 2 years ago. I'm exactly the same person. So I don't know where the world is heading or where the tides are changing or whether, was it the eclipse the other day or whatever, but all of a sudden I'm a hero.
Well, I think you should apply for the next James Bond when it comes up.
It's funny you say that. I can't say what it was because I signed a non-disclosure agreement, but I was a stunt double for a very big film coming out this year.
You'll see
it later in the year.
You know what I'm talking about. But like you'd hit the diversity box. I mean, you're like slightly brown, but you're white and you're bald. So, I mean, that must be a special identity class there.
Someone said to me the other day when we was handing out leaflets and they said, oh, you look like Jason Statham. I've never heard that one before. I've had The Rock, I've had Vin Diesel, I've had all sorts. Yeah.
No, it's awesome. So no, but listen, going back to men, right? Like, why is it important to like stand up for being a man? I mean, what does a man mean to you? Because for some out there nowadays, being a man is toxic masculinity and You know, you're not a nice guy, and you're misogynistic, and you treat women badly. What is it? What does a man mean to you?
Yeah, I've heard a lot of these, you know, these ideologies, these sort of toxic things being said about men. Honestly, they just bounce off of me most of the time.
I'm sure most things bounce off of you. When I went to hug you, I felt like I was just bouncing off you.
Oh, God, I love it. I love it. Yeah, you know, men are simple. We're simple creatures, but you have to stick to your morals and you know, your integrity as a man. You have to uphold that at every aspect of your life and at every point.
Dude, you are 100% fracking right when you say men are simple. We are so goddamn simple. It's unbelievable. I'll give you an example. It's quite funny, right? So I had a podcast with someone yesterday, right? Today's what? Tuesday, isn't it? Yeah, Monday. Tuesday. Monday morning, 9:30, I had a podcast organized with someone. Now, on Friday, I get a message from this person saying, are we still doing our podcast? And I sent a message back saying, laugh out loud, yes. And I sent a screenshot of the calendar with her name and the date and time. And I thought that was enough to say, as in like, yes. And then on Saturday, I got another text message saying, are we going ahead with the podcast at 9:30? And I'm like, yeah. And then on Sunday night, I get another text message at like 11 o'clock at night going, are we still going ahead with the podcast at 9:30? And I'm like, you're asking like 3 times in 3 days? Yeah. Why do you keep asking me these things?
Like they don't want to do it almost.
Do you know what? It's so funny. And then I woke up and I rang her, right, at 8 o'clock. I said, what is wrong? Like, you've asked me 3 times. Of course the podcast is going ahead. I'm really looking forward to it. And she goes, well, it's funny. I got invited on another show at 9:20. And I wanted to make sure that we were going ahead. And I said, would you have liked it if we had postponed or, you know, our podcast to 10 o'clock so that you could go on this? It was a TV radio type thing, you know, so that you could do the show at 9:20 and then we could do the podcast at 10 or half 10. She went, yeah, I would have loved that.
Then why didn't you just ask?
Why didn't you? Do you see what I mean? Yeah. Now, what do you think a guy would have done? A guy would have sent a message saying, oh, dude, I've been invited to another show at 9:20. Can we just push back the chat to like 10 o'clock or half 10?
And I mean, I think we had it wasn't the exact same scenario, but, you know, I can't remember. Because we postponed this from before, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was like really busy. And I was like, you know, can we just do this next week or something?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We just postponed it.
Yeah. No, but you know what?
Yeah, they're different creatures, they are.
They want you to read their minds.
Yes, they do, yeah.
My wife expects me to read her mind. But I love her for it. I love her for it. But yeah, I mean, I think it's important because it just goes to show men and women are different. And the thing is, it's not different in a bad way. It's a different in a beautiful way that we should celebrate the differences.
We have to be different.
Right?
Without the difference, there is no beauty. You know, it's like,
without a difference, I'd be gay.
We define each other. That, you know, men and women define each other. You know, without our masculinity, there is no femininity.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. All right. Well, listen, we've definitely talked about that now, and I'm happy with that. It's good that you're a man and you're speaking up for what a man is. I get upset nowadays because I grew up in the 80s, all right, as a little kid in Glasgow, a little brown kid in Glasgow, and it was tough. I'm not going to lie.
I can imagine Glasgow. Wow. Back then, yeah.
Mate, I just wanted to be like everyone else. You know, everything just didn't seem fair. Everybody had normal sounding names and I was Ahmed Malik and no one could pronounce my name properly. Ahmad or whatever. And, you know, it's really funny. I just wanted to fit in. I wanted to belong like everyone else. You know, even our families, like my mom and dad would tell us about what was going on in our families. And I was like, why can't our family just get on? Well, what is it with Pakistani families? And I came up with this line, Pakistani family drama. I was like, because I just thought all the white kids had normal families with nothing going on, no drama. It was just us. It was only when I grew up and, you know, realized actually family drama happens to everyone.
Wait till you meet a Cypriot family. What drama is then? Jesus Christ. You'll hear us like screaming and shouting and you think there's a major argument going on, but actually we're just talking about what we're having for dinner.
But yeah, I just wanted to be a white kid in the 1980s, just like everyone else. didn't want to be treated differently, didn't want to be asked, oh, where are you really from? You know, where's your real home? And, you know, all these kind of things. And I just didn't want to be different. Now I feel sorry for the average young white kid. I think they have it tough, especially if you're straight. I'm like, now you have to tick all these diversity boxes and you have to be special. Nowadays, the focus is on identity, not your merits.
Yeah.
And I think that's sad.
Yeah, you can see that in a lot of areas, or, you know, everywhere.
Everywhere.
A lot of demographics everywhere. Yeah. Merit has become secondary.
Mm. So now, listen, you've got this gym. You're successful. You're doing well in life. You're taking care of yourself. Like, you're clearly branching out. Like you said, you're a stuntman double. Why did you decide to run for the mayor of London?
You know, I guess it stems from all of the sort of battles I've had with the establishment, so to speak. I've been battling for years, you know, before COVID. You know, I've been battling, I'd say, for like the best part of a decade against the establishment in every different sort of area. And I felt I've always been like on the defense, you know, even with COVID, I'm keeping my gym open. I'm fighting, you know, they're prosecuting me. I'm winning court cases in court, but I've always felt like I'm on the defense. And all of a sudden now I'm doing something. I feel like I'm on the offense. I'm attacking back. And that is essentially why I'm doing it. I'm trying to steal the system back from the psychopaths that hold power over the system that is governing us. You know, because you could argue, you know, what, you can't let this system govern you. You know, you have to just live as a free man. But in some way or the other, everybody is being governed by this system. You know, unless you move up to the Highlands, I don't know, you're from Scotland, move into the Highlands, escape somewhere, build a cottage that is completely self-sufficient, you know, grow your own food, you know, get your own rainwater, something like that. You are, you know, truly escaping away from the system. In one way or the other, everybody is being governed by this system. So I've come to that sort of realization and acceptance that I'm going to live in this society and this system is going to govern me. And that right now, I truly believe that not a single, you know, person in power, a politician, is governing us fairly. The very best any politician can sort of offer us right now is like a managed decline of our public services. And I mean, a lot more of them are offering something far more nefarious. But for me right now, that is why I'm doing this. I'm trying to steal that system back right under their nose and take control of it.
There's a problem. The problem is, where I live, I can't vote for you.
That's right.
Dude.
Yeah, you're outside London.
Dude, I'm really sorry. I wish I could vote for you. You would have my vote. You know, if I was still living in Bermondsey, I mean, I've actually lived in lots of places. I lived in Stanmore. I lived in Camberwell. I lived in Brixton. I lived in Bermondsey. Yeah, I've been around a bit. But yeah, I would definitely vote for you. I think you're 100% right. I mean, the thing is, I don't trust any politician.
Why would you?
Right? So technically, I shouldn't trust you, but you're not really a politician, are you?
I mean, that's...
I mean, you don't look like one.
You got me there.
No, but I don't trust any politicians. But you're right. We are in this game. We're in this matrix.
Yeah.
And unplugging it is very difficult. And you need a lot of money, a lot of dedication, a lot of sacrifice to be truly out of the matrix.
Yeah.
And even then, can you really?
Yeah, it is almost an impossible task.
So it's a case of doing your best. And I think if we're going to change anything, it has to be from bottom up.
Yeah.
We all as individuals have to fight back and say, no, we're not going to put up with this. And I think I admire you doing this. So let's talk about the campaign, right? Mayor of London, you've got your official parties. I mean, how many people, and you must have other independents, who are the big ticket people? What are the different parties? And who are you up against? Frankly, I don't think you have really any competition. They're all scum. Am I allowed to say that? Yeah. I mean, like, you know, you're a man of integrity and honor. You're trying to do the right thing. So it's not really competition you've got, but who are the other people that you're up against?
So right now there's 13 candidates in total. That is the total that made it onto the ballot. There was a lot more that sort of announced their intention to run as a candidate. They didn't actually make it onto the ballot because there's a sort of very tedious and long administration process, nomination process that you have to go through to get onto the ballot. A lot of people didn't make it on. I think there was around 20 something that, you know, declared their intention to run, and 13 made it on. So I think this is the smallest ever sort of pool of candidates that are ever running for mayor, which is giving me a lot of hope. There's only two or three that are actually fully independent. There is other candidates that have formed their own party. So it's like an independent party. But there's not many candidates that are sort of independent totally. I think there's two or three. The big parties, you've got Little Man Khan, you've got Snoozy Susie, you've got the green one, Zoe Garbett. They're the sort of main three players. They always seem to come first, second and third in the run-ups. I am an independent candidate, you know. The way I've sort of set this up is I am completely independent. I'm not accepting any donations. I've completely self-funded this myself.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah, and there's a reason for that, and that is because I don't ever want to owe a single person any favours, any sort of backhanders that needed to be paid. I don't want any of that to my name or my ideas. You know, all of my policies, my ideas, they're entirely my own. And if I win and I get elected, I will implement straight away. I won't have to owe anybody any favours.
Dude, what's on my baseball cap?
Is it uncaptured?
Yeah. I think you should be wearing this.
Yeah.
I think you should be wearing my baseball cap. So you're uncaptured.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, you're definitely not a fracking politician then, mate. Don't you understand the deal? Yeah. Don't you understand that you need to be beholden? Yeah. You need to be captured in some way, that you need to be compromised in some way? So you know where you're sitting? I had Andrew Bridgen sitting there one day. He was one of the first people. Example. He was one of the first people on my podcast. I never published it. We had many technical issues because I just started off. Everything kept crashing. So it's like in 10 different snippets. He was mumbling a lot. But he said, and maybe I should publish bits of it. He said that almost everyone in the Houses of Parliament was compromised or complicit in some way. Yeah. And I was like, wow, are you serious? He was like, yeah, either through some sexual or financial shenanigans. There was something on everyone, and they were all like basically beholden to their paymasters. That's sad.
Yeah.
And that's worrying.
That's the problem with politicians right now. Not a single politician has got to where they got without having to grease palms, without having to, you know, pay back a favor. That's the name of the game with politics. And that is why independents find it so difficult to where they want to get to, because, you know, there's always something in their way, and all of these people that have greased palms to get where they want to get to, they're always going to try and hold someone back, like someone like me, from getting there. But I think what's coming, I don't think they're ever going to be able to stop it.
All right,
there's a massive tidal wave coming.
I really hope so, man. I mean, sometimes I get a little bit, is there really any hope for humanity? You know, are we really going to be able to do anything? Maybe the whole system needs to collapse and fail because it's so rotten. But I admire you trying to work within the system to change it. God bless you. I think everyone needs to do something, and you are doing something. So let's break this down. I just want some little quick facts. You know, what's the population of London that's voting for this?
So the population of London is around 10 million people. The last elections, only, I think it was about just under 40% of Londoners actually voted, which is a very low turnout.
Okay.
Of them, 40%. That voted, it was, I think, so Sadiq Khan obviously won it. He had a little over a million votes. Sean Bailey, he had about 850,000 or something like that. So it was quite a close race. But this time round, there's a massive appetite for something different. You know, people that voted that last time, it was a very low turnout. They were voting because they were voting for their subscribed team. You know, I've been canvassing all over London the last couple of months, and people, when I talk to them, and they, you know, you get like the odd one or two sort of Little Man Khan supporters, and you ask them, why are you voting for that? They're voting for Labour. They're not even voting for him. They're voting for their subscribed colour. And it is, you know, it's like this tribal mentality.
Isn't it stupid?
It is so stupid. It is.
Come on, people, wake the frack up. Yeah.
And it only takes like a 2 minute conversation and then they go walking away thinking like, what the hell have I been doing all this time?
Yeah, why are you voting for a stupid team, a colour, essentially?
Literally a football team.
Literally a football team. And I don't know if you know, but I was recently on GB News. I got invited by accident onto Nigel Farage's show. I'm sure it was by accident. And I said to him, I said, you know, he was like, oh, Labour were the ones that privatised energy. I was like, don't give me that. It's a uni party. And I don't care.
I loved it when you said that. I watched
it. Did you watch that?
I did. Well, I watched it. I loved it.
You literally
summed it up perfectly.
Thanks, man. I mean, forget about, you know, Labour, Reform, you know, Lib Dems, Conservative. They're all the same.
Two cheeks of the same arse. There is no meaningful distinction between Labour and Tories. They are, like I said, two cheeks of the same arse. What are the
policy differences? There are none. The only difference is one says, oh, let's do more of something than another.
They appear to offer something different just to sort of uphold the image of, you know, red and blue being different, but they are literally the same thing. It is a uni party and they stay in power through that uni party system. You know, they've got their subscribed supporters and there's this, you know, there's this horrible sort of rotten, I don't even know what to call it. It's the way people feel towards politics. And I don't blame them, but that is how they stay in power because people are like, oh, what's the point of voting? You know, oh, you're never going to win. You know, like, what's the point of voting? If voting it made a difference, then they wouldn't let us do it. You know, that sort of mentality. And that is how they stay in power because if you look at like the last elections with the mayoral elections, like I said, only it was around 40% of people actually voted. If that other 60% of people just got up and voted who for someone they thought would make a difference, the uni party would lose.
It's that apathy, isn't it? The apathy sucks out their drive and their will.
Yeah.
And we need to destroy this whole uni party business. Yeah. You know, it's the biggest con out there. And these other so-called parties that are offering alternatives, I don't blame them. I don't believe them for a second. You know, I was for a short while part of the Brexit party thinking that we could get out of the European sphere of control, reclaim true democracy. I'm now of the opinion that the Brexit party was a controlled opposition to fizzle away the popular vote. You know, like some people have told me high up in the party and I think that, you know what, the vote was actually 71, 72% wanting Brexit. And then they said, yeah, it was only 51%. And then it was like straight away, fear porn, fear campaign. How do we basically throw it into the long grass and actually make us worse off than we were before, which is where we are now. And, you know, the same will happen with these other people that are, I'm sure, going for the mayoral candidacy. But unless there's someone like you who really is independent, I don't believe in them.
This is what I'm trying to say.
I'm sorry.
Any political party can be bought and paid for. You know, you can start up a political party that has all the best intentions in the world, but once you've formed a political party, you then have a website and there is a donate button on that website. So you are literally can be bought and paid for because the second, even if you clearly state on the donate thing, you know, your donation doesn't allow you to create any sort of policy with us or what, you know, whatever, you will always feel that intention, that sort of owing a favour to that person. You know, some geezer just came along and he donated £1 million to our party. Oh, you know, you have some sort of feeling towards that person. You can be bought and paid for if you're a political party. An independent, like myself, an independent that refuse to accept donations cannot be bought and paid for.
Okay, so 10 million people in London, 40% turnout last time. So how many different boroughs are there? How many different areas?
So there's 32 boroughs plus the City of London. The City of London is actually technically another country. We won't get into that whole discussion.
Oh, trust me, I know that. It's extra sovereignty. It's not even, it's unbelievable.
Yeah. Well, yeah, so there's, we'll say 33 boroughs, a number that a lot of people don't like. There's a lot of different sort of demographics in London. If you go to sort of like the central London boroughs, they've got very different feelings towards the outer London boroughs. They've got, you know, very different sort of views on different areas. You know, look at sort of like certain transportation policies like ULEZ and like that. The outer London boroughs, they feel a lot more harsh and bitter towards those policies, rightly so.
So yeah, the whole ULEZ thing, I mean, it's ultra low emission zone. It's complete nonsense. To me, it's nothing about emissions. It's all about making money.
Oh yeah. I mean, if you really wanted to combat air pollution, there's so many ways of doing it. You do not need to, you know, charge and penalize the working class to combat air pollution. That whole ULEZ, LEZ congestion charge, the tunnel tolls, the new Project Detroit paper mile system they're trying to implement, it is literally just a new tax. It's a new revenue for City Hall.
So they got the congestion charge zone. Now there's the ULEZ, and then it's getting, the congestion zone is getting bigger. ULEZ is getting bigger. It's just nonsense. It's just, for me, it's money grabbing.
Of course it is. And it is.
And they use the whole climate change agenda as the justification. And it's like, what? You don't believe in climate change? You want to kill the planet? So then they guilt you into falling for the scam. And so the scam is climate change, man-made climate change, some BS. And then based on that, all these other additional policies. And then the problem is we've got a societal problem where I'm sure there's a lot of people in central London who are buying into this BS, who've been propagandized, and now are like virtue signaling. I'm riding my bike. I'm a good person. I'm saving the planet. I'm eating a fake burger. I am not a man anymore. Good for you. Well, the rest of us are. And I want to eat my steak and drive a big car. I mean, this is the problem that we've got.
Yeah, I mean, it is just another war on an area of our freedom. You know, these are called public highways. Nobody owns those highways. All of a sudden, we're being charged and penalized in different, you know, you've got ULEZ, congestion charge, whatever the name is you want to call it. They are public highways. They are, nobody owns them. This is an attack on our right to travel.
And are they going to...
It's a fundamental right to travel.
Yeah. And that's a fundamental right. Yeah. You don't need a law. I've also come to the conclusion that, you know what? A law doesn't mean anything. If a law is unjust, it's my duty to ignore it.
I love that.
And violate it. Look, if there's a law...
You summed me up, excuse my language. That was amazing.
Listen, if there's a fracking law that said, do you know what? Let's go and round up all the packies. That's the law. Does that mean we should follow that law?
Certainly not. This is what I'm saying.
Right. So what I'm just, I know it sounds ridiculous. I'm giving a really ridiculous example, right? We should round up all redheads. Actually, you know what? We should round up all bald men with beards and muscled up like you. We should round all of you up. If there's a law passed like that, does that mean we should all follow that law and believe in that law and go, oh, yeah, okay? No, of course not. If there's a stupid law, it's our duty to say no fracking way.
And if you don't, this is what I was saying as the start. Your integrity as a man is under attack.
Right there.
I live literally, people have heard me say this like nonstop, but I live by the saying, you have to be right to fight. You can't be wrong and strong. In this world, all that matters, all you have to your name is your morals. The second you give that up, you have lost your integrity as a man.
Dude, I love you. I feel very manly right now. I
just bumped it,
man. I feel so manly because look, I stood up and I walked away from my career, my hard won career. And dude, I'm telling you right now, growing up as an immigrant child, you know, a son of immigrants in Glasgow in a working class area, fighting through the racism in the 80s and all that kind of stuff, I had a tough life. All the exams, climbing up that pole to get to where I am, and to walk away then, because you know what? I'm a man of integrity.
You kept your integrity, and that is more important than anything in this world. You have to keep your integrity.
So you know what is really nice? Meeting another man of integrity. I'm feeling a lot of love towards you. Seriously. I mean, we need more of you in this world. So listen, so we've got the boroughs, we've got all that kind of stuff. We've got the idea that the outer boroughs are kind of different from the inner boroughs, that some are more wokey, liberal, lefty.
Yep.
People say to me, for example, oh, you should run for parliament. I was like, well, here, there's more chance of hell freezing over than me being elected to the Houses of Parliament. They're so liberal, lefty, wokey here. It's unbelievable. It's, they're just totally indoctrinated and brainwashed. You know, I read this beautiful piece by Paul Levy, where he goes, it's the invasion of the body snatchers come true. I don't know if you've ever watched that movie, but these alien pods come in, right? And they sap onto your body, and then it grows another human being that looks like you, but it's actually the alien.
I've watched that, yeah, years ago. This is really old.
It's really old, right? And it sucks. And these people walking around like zombies, man. They're walking around, and then they make a funny noise, and you don't know who is who. And there's this one guy, Donald Sutherland, he's holding out to the last, right? And if you sleep, this pod will attach to you and grow, and then you're dead. So you can't sleep. So everybody's like wake, staying awake, fighting the sleep, and they don't know who to trust because they look just like other human beings.
This is a scarily perfect analogy.
Right. And then right at the last minute, right, Donald Sutherland turns around and points and makes this funny.
And it was him all along.
No, he's been taken over. Oh, God. Just when you thought he's holding out.
He was the controlled opposition.
And this article by Paul Levi was like, the problem is the invasion of the body snatchers has come true. The problem is this mind virus has infected all of us. You know, some people say, you know, they are the ones controlling us. And, you know, whoever, I don't know who they are, right? Like, I don't know. There's lots of names bandied around. I'm not going to go into it. But I spoke to someone and it was really quite poignant. He said, they isn't them anymore. They are your bus drivers, your school teachers.
The body snatchers.
They're everywhere now. Yeah. Because their mentality has been infected. They believe in the climate agenda. They believe in transgender. They believe in you know, drag queen hour in you know, kindergarten. You know, they believe in all this stuff. They believe in 15-minute cities. And that's kind of scary. Right, so listen, back to your burrs and everything. So money, mate. So I did, like, I was a PPC here for the Brexit party. I got a team of people. You had to have a lot of volunteers. You had to have people canvassing, holding stalls, handing out leaflets. Cost money to print posters and all that kind of stuff. Banners. Dude, this is the City of London. My area was like 400,000. You're 10 million? How many supporters and volunteers do you have? How many stalls do you have set up? What is your campaign like? And how much is it fracking costing you? Because what? This is an investment. And I hate to say this, the odds are, theoretically, we are really against you. So you've gone into this knowing the odds are against you. You've got a mountain to climb. I want to know what you've put in, because it tells me, as a measure of a man, you really are walking the walk. You're not just talking the talk. You're putting everything, you're putting your wallet and everything where your mouth is.
I think a lot of people know I'm, you know, all action and no talk. I'm, you know, the opposite of most people. You're not going to get any small talk from me. And when I do something, I don't, you know, do it half-hearted. You know, I'm taking this seriously. Yeah. It hasn't been a sort of cheap thing to do. And it's been very sort of timely, costly, a lot of my energy. I started this sort of project back in last year, 2023, around February, I started with this. It's been a long road to get to where I'm at.
So how big is your team?
I mean, my team is not actually as big as you think it is. I have a campaign manager. I've got a content creator, a social media sort of manager, and we have a press manager. I've got my campaign tour bus with the chauffeur.
Very impressive campaign bus. I love it. It's a bright yellow bus. It's brilliant.
Yeah, yeah. It's my colours. Black and yellow. That's my skydiving colours.
You skydive as well?
Yeah, I'm a skydiver. And doing it for about 10 years.
Right. I don't know who produces the James Bond movies. I'm sure you're not listening to this, but if you are, come on, man. This is the next James Bond. Skydivers are unbelievable. Right. What about volunteers handing out leaflets and stuff like that? Have you got anything
So we've got a load of support. You know, we get every day coming on the campaign bus with us. We get, you know, extra people come in, and we've got people out there sort of handing out leaflets all over London and everything. I think the main thing people appreciate is just me, like, getting out there. You know, there's no other candidate or even politician in general that has their feet on the ground talking to just regular, ordinary people. You know, like...
And you know what's really sad, though? What's really sad is that a lot of people still on the day want to vote for their colour.
Yeah.
What would you say to those people who just go, oh, do you know what? Andreas is a nice guy. He looks like James Bond. But I'm going to go vote for little man Sadiq.
All I can say to someone like that is, and I had a very similar conversation with someone today. I was like, what is it you like about little man Khan? Tell me, what is it you like about him? And the person I asked today was literally speechless, and most people are. They were like, well, and then I sort of cut in and I said to him, is it the 1,000 plus dead body murders we've had over the last two terms. Most of them are children. Is it that you like? They're like, oh.
Should I say that again? What was that?
Yeah, so there's been over 1,000 murders, and most of them are children in his two terms that he's been there.
So in eight years in London, there's been 1,000 murders.
Over 1,000 murders. Yeah, just this weekend gone.
1,000 murders.
Over 1,000. And just this weekend gone, there was 4 murders. 2 of them were stabbings, literally. Yeah, I mean, it's
even worse than when I left. So I left London in 2010. I was out in Bermondsey. Okay, and what was really freaking me out was my little short walk from my flat to Bermondsey Tube Station. I'd been living there for 5 years or 6 years or whatever. And, you know, it felt quite safe in the beginning. And then suddenly I started seeing all these signs. Any witness? Stabbing. It was like literally just down the road from me. And I was like, what the hell? And I wouldn't want to go out in the evening anymore. It didn't feel safe.
You should see it now. It is getting to the point like a scene from Gotham City or something. You know, London now accounts for 1/3 of all violent knife crime in the whole of the country. It's, as I told you, the exact stats, says 13,503 serious knife offences were recorded last year, with a national total of 48,856. It's getting past the point of you know, we can't even sort of describe acceptance. It's now to the point where we are at, you know, critical levels. You know, that people refer to it as a knife crime epidemic. It is an epidemic.
Okay, so I, for my sanity, if you look at these pictures on your right, you know, the BBC and this, I don't watch the TV anymore, okay? But the news does drip through to me. You know, friends, people tell me, oh, look at this, check this out. I really haven't heard anything in that sphere criticizing about the knife crimes or calling out Little Man Khan for, you know, not doing anything. Am I right? Are they sheltering him? Is he being protected? Because you would think with that kind of statistic, I mean, his face would be plastered over everything and, you know, he would be disgraced. What's going on?
Yeah, I mean, you have to ask yourself and wonder why it's not, you know, being in the forefront of every newspaper every day. There is actually some media outlets. I think it was the Sun newspaper report. It's, I mean, funny enough, the Sun newspaper reported it, I think it was yesterday or today. They said, if you want another 4 years of murder, then vote for Little, you know, like vote for Little Man Khan. If you don't want this, you have to vote him out. So it's like, as much as we want to look at the Sun newspaper as like a trash newspaper, I have to commend them for sort of highlighting the issue.
Do you know what makes me sad? What makes me sad is, so my parents are from Pakistan. They came when they were like teenagers, right? Long time ago. My dad's passed away now. I'm kind of glad actually he's not around now. I think he'd be so upset at the state of the world. But, you know, I'm sure Little Man Khan is also from Pakistan.
Yeah.
Right? And then you got this guy in Scotland, the First Minister, Hamza Yousaf.
He's crony.
He's from Pakistan. Yeah.
They're best buddies.
Right. You know what? It's like, oh, for fuck's sake, man. Do you know what? Like, come on. You know, come on. As a kid, the idea that the Mayor of London or the First Minister of Scotland would be a Pakistani.
It's inspiring.
It would have been like, wow, this is fantastic. And then when I see now the reality, I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, seriously, is this it? Like, it's so bad. It's unbelievable because it's like such a disappointment. Such a disappointment, mate.
You're not the only Pakistani that feels that. I was in Whitechapel on, I think it was last week. Wednesday last week, Tower Hamlets, Whitechapel. And I'd say it's one of the biggest sort of Muslim communities in London there. And I've never.
Bengali.
Yeah, there's a big Bengali community. There's Pakistan, a lot of Muslims there. I've never heard so much hate for another, you know, person of their similar kind. The Muslim community around there, they absolutely hate him. And I can only feel it's because he's becoming a disgrace to Islam. to.
Well, I'm not a Muslim anymore. I gave that up a long, long time ago, mate. I believe in God and that's it. Let's not talk about that. But as someone from an ethnic minority and the same ethnic minority as me, who must have gone through the same struggles as me, I just think, what a disgrace. You should know better. You should know fracking better than what you're doing right now. And, you know, put me in their shoes. I mean, I say, you know, get me in to 10 Downing Street. Forget a day.
You'll make every Pakistani and whoever it is proud of you.
I would also sort out 99% of the shit in one afternoon. I'm not joking, mate.
No, I bet you would.
Do you know when they say, oh, it's really complicated, but it's like, no, you don't
understand. It's not complicated at all.
Right? Isn't it? Is it complicated?
Not at all.
You know, why do you say that?
You know, they'll always bring it back to, we haven't got the money for this or the money for that. And I will tell you right now, they do have the money for this. If they want to sort it, they can sort it like that. The Royal Mint, you know, prints out money. It's like, it's made from polymer. They literally print it out by the second.
But only for their friends. Don't you understand the magic money tree? It's only for your friend.
Yeah. The cronies. Yeah. Cronyism has been running rampant for the last couple of decades. Now it's at the point where it's just like, they're not even trying to hide it. It's just like in our face, like, wow.
So, you know what? I always think it's really weird. We've got this hybrid system where we've got crony capitalism. In the finance sector, right, stripping away and raping us, that, you know, the parasite that has always been there in humanity, you know, before it was a small size, it just sustained itself and fed off us. Now this parasite is like literally a child on my back. It's weighing us down. Do you know what I mean? And it doesn't care if it sucks us dry and kills us.
That's what it's trying to do.
Right? That's what the parasite's like now. And, but we, as well as that crony capitalism, we've got this other flip side of this really socialist, Marxist, communist cultural ideology now. You know, you can't speak out. Everything's for the greater good. It's all about collectivism. Break up the family unit. Break up the faith, the religion. I mean, although I don't have a religion, I have faith. I always say to people, like, you know, I try and walk the path, the good path. You know, I look at people like Buddha, look at Christ, listen to his teachings. You know, I probably follow Christ's teachings more than a lot of Christians that I know. You know? So, But the thing is, like,
it's a new cult that's been formed.
Yes.
Yeah.
I talk about cults quite a lot. You don't know this, but I grew up in a cult.
Tell me about it. Go on. I want to hear.
You should listen to my podcast with Jeff Buys Cars. So Jeff Buys Cars. Jeff has a YouTube channel called Jeff Buys Cars, Secondhand Cars. And it turned out off air on the driveway. It was like, oh, dude, he's chatting to me. A lot of churches here. And I was like, yeah. He goes, oh, I know a lot about churches. I grew up in a Christian cult. I was like, what? And I grew up in a Muslim cult. So I grew up in a cult called Ahmadiyya. And it's, I didn't know it was a cult. When you're in a cult, you don't know it's a cult. Like, you don't know. And like, so, you know, you're the only Paki in Govan and that here in Des Moines, the only Paki in the school, and you grow up and, like, you know, you just want to be like everyone else. And then you go to university, you meet other Pakistanis, they go, what kind of Muslim are you? And I'm like, I'm a Muslim. And they go, like, yeah, but what kind? I went, I'm like, what do you mean? And like, Ahmadi Muslim? And they're like, oh, you're not Muslim. I was like, what? Like, no, you're a cult. You're like, so. Yeah, it was totally bizarre. I knew it was something wrong. I didn't feel right. But there's a lot of cults out there, mate. I mean, there's religious cults, but there's also ideological cults. There's NHS is a cult. Climate change is a cult. COVID vaccines are a cult. Do you worship the holy vaccine?
This cultism now is.
Do you? Do you, by the way? Do you worship the holy vaccine?
Jesus Christ. God forbid. This cultism has just created so much division. It's just, we've just lost touch with just the basic forms, the basics of humanity. It's like sometimes I sit there wondering, how the hell have we got to where we are right now?
Right.
Just basics, you know, like family values, just being nice to other people, just even a smile walking down the road.
I want you to close your eyes for a second.
Right, let's do it.
I just want you to picture something. Picture Jesus Christ, right? Don't picture the blonde-haired, blue-eyed version, right? He's a brown man. long brown hair, beautiful beard like yours, and he's got a Facebook profile, and he's got a rainbow on it, and a Ukraine flag.
Oh, bloody
hell. And he's just boasted about his latest booster.
Oh, you've done me now.
Do you think that's what Jesus would be doing?
Yeah, these woke ideologies have just, they've poisoned everybody everywhere. It's like I said, it's just we've lost the basics of humanity.
I thought you were going to say we've lost the plot. But yeah.
We have lost the plot, yeah.
So what is it like right now in London? What do you think? Is there a poll? Has anybody seen what the voting preference is like? And where are you ranking there? Do you feel like there's a momentum behind you now? Are people aware of you? Do people know of your name at least? What's happening out there?
The mainstream media have got polls out there, and I just honestly, I have no idea where they're getting where this sort of data is coming from, because
I wouldn't be surprised if it's fixed.
I wouldn't be surprised, they're coming with some numbers, whether they literally just asked 8 people, and they chose which 8 people they were going to ask. it is just so unbelievable. The Evening Standard done this silly little post on Instagram the other day. They made this, it was like Trump card posts. Where they had a picture of each candidate and a sort of score on where they stand at winning and a score on their, I think it was gaffability, likability. They put Little Man Khan as likability 8, his chance of winning 8, his gaffability, I think it was something 3 or something like that. It's like, who the hell gave him a score of 8? Where did they get that from? I've been speaking to tens of thousands of people over the last few months, and I'd say out of every 100 people I speak to, you'll get 1, maybe 2 people say they like Sadiq Khan. I don't know where they're getting this data from, but it is not from the general population. I can promise you that.
No, I believe you.
Yeah.
Right, listen, tell me something. Before we talk about Little Man Khan, probably my height. Probably even taller than me. I'm quite sure. I'm 5'7". How tall is Sadiq Khan?
I've got no idea.
We should Google it.
Let's Google it.
So what? Yeah. while I'm Googling that, can you do me a favor? Let's do positive politics. What are the things you stand for? Right. What are the things you stand for?
I stand for fundamental freedoms, and when I mean freedoms, I mean, just every area of policy, our freedom to travel, our freedom to take care of our health, empowering people to take care of their health.
Right. No, we need to stop for a second. Dude, I'm so fucking happy. Sorry, fracking happy. He's 5'4".
He's shorter than you. Yeah?
I tower 3 inches over him.
You got this.
Dude, I got this, man. I can now say, Little Man Khan.
He's Little Man Khan, yeah. You know what? It's fine. To be fair, I don't even call his. But I tell you what, I don't even call him Little Man. It's partly his height, but the main thing is he has got the biggest case of Little Man Syndrome I've ever seen in my life. He just, the way he just thinks he can do what he wants, and the way he talks to people, talks to women, and the way he just looks. He's up on this high horse, looking down on everyone, imposing these authoritarian policies on everyone. He's just got, like I said, the biggest case of little man syndrome I've ever seen in my life. Yeah.
No, I think you're right.
And it's about time someone just tells him. It's like, how the hell has he got to this point and no one sort of put him in his place?
How? I'll tell you how. And it's how is because he's backed up to the hilt. He's been put in there.
Yep.
He's a puppet and he's following orders.
Yep. He's the poster boy for the whole net zero agenda. He is literally the poster boy.
Right. We'll come to that in a second. I'm sorry I interrupted you. I got really excited there because I can call him Little Man Khan. I would tower over him. Unless he's wearing high heels. Maybe he does wear high heels. I don't know. Maybe. Anything's possible these days. But listen, so back to the things you stand for. You stand for freedom, freedom of movement and travel, none of this ULEZ. Are they bringing in 15-minute cities into London? Are they going to be doing that?
It looks like that's where it's going. The way these LTNs and ULEZ.
What's LTNs?
So you probably don't have them around here, but they're called, it's short for low traffic neighborhoods. So what it is it's just basically like they'll the whole sort of idea behind it is they'll get like a sort of area, and it's usually a residential area, and they'll sort of cut that off from the rest of the sort of so wide area, you know, the ward, and they'll have like an entrance, maybe one or two entrances, and you know, one or two exits, and you have to literally go in one way, go out the other way. And now what that does is it directs all the traffic to like a main road. And what this is supposed to do is create lower traffic within the residential area. What it is doing in reality is creating way more traffic all on the high roads. Like you could be in a standstill for like 2 hours on a high road just to travel sort of like 5 minutes down the road.
Who's thought of this stupid idea?
Well, the idea, these were supposed to be sort of experimental schemes by the councils. There was massive sort of like, as you can imagine, there was massive sort of like objections to it by the local residents, which was a lot of, some of the councils actually listened to the residents and they removed the LTNs in one or two of the boroughs. But little man Khan, because he is the head of planning in London, he has the ultimate sort of say over planning, went and placed planning restrictions on the local boroughs to prevent them from removing the LTNs. So wherever...
Proper little Napoleon.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay, okay. So what else do you stand for? That was a deep sigh.
Yeah.
It's been a long day. I appreciate that.
Yeah, yeah. I stand for people. I'm just a regular guy. I'm not a politician. My values are family values. I've spent the most part of my life just trying to help people to stick up for themselves.
All right, listen. When you get appointed, right? Who are you going to appoint as your special health advisor?
Yeah.
This is not a difficult question, by the way.
You are definitely on the short list.
Correct answer.
I mean, with the whole health thing, you know that it's a very big topic for me. I'd say it's almost as important as the whole policing and crime aspect. But I guess no politician or no sort of mayoral candidate ever wants to actually address health. It's always, you know, healthcare. You know, something which you're aware of. You know, the NHS is always treatment after the fact, which isn't health. Health is prevention. You know, actually taking care of yourself and preventing yourself from becoming ill.
100%. Right. Okay. What about all the knife crimes and murders? How are you going to stop that? Apart from walking around with a cape, right, and your Batman suit and your Batmobile. I mean, that does look like a Batmobile. Your car. I have to admit, your car is pretty cool. It's a very nice car. Like, how are you going to sort it out?
There's 13 candidates, like I said, and I am the only candidate that's actually addressing knife crime. I'm the only candidate who's formed a plan to solve knife crime in London. My plan's called Operation Brennan.
Brennan?
Brennan, yeah. It's a funny name. I'm not sure you might recognise the name. I don't know. Do you recognise it? No? So it's actually named after a veteran officer of the Metropolitan Police called Norman Brennan. So he was like the main contributor, the main stakeholder, the main person I consulted with to form this plan. Now, there's a short-term element, a medium-term element, and a long-term element to the plan. Because as you can appreciate, we're not going to solve this issue overnight. This is a long-term issue.
Multifactorial.
Multifactorial, yeah. So the short-term element is basically to lay the hammer of law down on the issue, to stop the deaths, to stop the children dying. You know, that has to be the priority here, is to preserve life. Children are dying, and, you know, I'm a father, you're a father. You already know the main priority in your life is your children.
100%.
So the medium-term element is basically to reintegrate the police back into the communities and build that trust again. Yeah, just engaging with the police again, because it's been that whole sort of engagement with the police has just gone over the last sort of decade. It's disappeared.
But it's like everything. Like, we don't have consistency anymore.
Yeah.
You go to your local GP, it's not your GP anymore. You don't know who they are. They don't know you.
Yeah.
They don't know your records. 20 years ago, 30 years ago, your GP knew you from when you were born to when you went to the grave. I mean, like, it was like they knew your family. It was a family doctor for a reason.
Yeah.
Now you go to GP practice, you don't know who the hell you're seeing. You don't know who it is. It's a locum. It's a whatever, the police officer. I don't know my local police officer.
I'd be good. Yeah, it's the same with the police. No,
who's my? If someone's policing your community, you know, you're looking out for each other. And if you're part of that community, you won't want to do anything because you know you're harming your own family. Like, we've lost all that.
It's gone. It's literally gone. It's the same with the police, that nobody trusts them anymore. Nobody respects them anymore. You know,
I don't trust them.
Yeah. I mean, why would you trust them?
They're all Freemasons.
Yeah.
Where were they during COVID?
Yeah. Well, they were outside my gym stopping everyone from coming. I think he was a superintendent I was chatting to outside the gym at one point. There was, I think, 40-odd police officers lined up outside the gym.
40?
Yeah, 40-odd lined up out there. I've got some pictures. It's just like, what? You look at them, you're just like, when I look back, it's just like insane. And I was having a chat with him. He said to me, listen, I really respect what you're doing. We've got, so down the road, we've just had a report. There's been an armed robbery. So I think it was with a knife. And we've been instructed, can't go and attend to that because we have to stay here outside the gym. That is where the police priorities lied.
You are kidding.
Yeah. Yeah. That's on it.
So this is what I mean. So like I did a recent tweet where I said, you know, if any of the following had stood up and said no, the pandemic wouldn't have happened. And I mean by that the doctors, the media, journalists, judges, the law.
Yeah. They all caused it.
The police.
Yeah.
I mean, if any one of these groups just went, nah, this is all bullshit.
Yeah.
The whole thing would have just fallen apart.
Yeah, the House of Cards would have fallen down. Yeah.
Now back to that invasion of the body snatchers.
Yeah.
It's them.
They kept it alive, yeah.
It's all of them now.
Yeah, I mean, the media was probably one of the biggest contributors to that. That's why me and the boys, we organised a lot of protests against the media. They like it when we done
that. Oh, mate, I remember that. I remember when we were marching for the mandates, we would walk past the BBC house, right, in central London. And we are talking about tens of thousands, like hundreds of thousands, right, of people, nurses, you know, paramedics, very few doctors. And you would barely get a mention in the news. Like,
yeah,
you know, like.
Or when they did it, it'd be like, yeah, a couple of hundred anti-vaxxers.
Yeah, yeah. It was literally like that, 100%. Yeah. And it was just like, what the frack? The media is really quite evil.
Powerful so tool.
Have they gone for you? Has anyone tried to discredit you? Or is there, I mean, no, any publicity is good publicity. I guess they've probably tried to ignore you and just not even recognize that you're on the ticket.
I mean, this time round, funny enough, I haven't really sort of experienced, I say this time round, but, you know, when I was sort of, when I was the bad guy, the villain, you know, fighting against the establishment on the defense. Yeah, they was, you know, I was pretty much plastered all over the newspapers.
But now?
Yeah, now, I mean, now I don't know whether they've forgotten about it or whether the whole sort of like tides have changed. But yeah, I'm not the bad guy anymore. So.
But are you getting any attention?
Yeah. I mean, we're getting.
Have you been on BBC?
I mean, this is the thing. So the BBC are required by law to broadcast information about every single sort of candidate. Right. So I was with them the other day. You know, I'd done a one-minute interview. They're supposed to do a one-minute interview with every candidate, which they broadcast out on primetime TV, on their social media channels. That's going to be a powerful one, I think, when they broadcast it. I took the gloves off for that one. Other news channels, yeah, I think I've been on pretty much most of them.
What about the Standard News? Was it the Standard? What's that?
Evening Standard.
That's the Evening Standard.
They've done a couple of pieces on me. Been fairly positive, you know. I honestly, this time right now, I'd say, I wouldn't say they're against me. They're definitely favouring, you know, the main sort of parties, the uni party. But they've been reporting.
So in terms of policies, you've got a knife crime kind of like policy. I'm sure you've got things like, you know, integrating community centres.
Yeah, so that, some kind back of, to the knife crime plan.
Yeah.
I almost forgot there. Yeah, that, what you just said, the integrating community centres, that falls under the sort of long-term element of the knife crime plan. So the long-term element basically is to address the more deep-rooted cultural issues surrounding knife crime.
But you know what? It's actually more multifactorial than that. Don't you think? For example, there's a disincentive now, like to have a family unit. It's better to be a single parent. You get more money and compensation and social security if you're a single mother and there's no father around. So there's a disincentive to have a man around, a it's strong almost like man.
The state is pushing people that direction, right? Which is
so. Then you've got children who don't have a good male role model. Then there's no real good job prospects. The standard of living is so poor. The average house price, the average person couldn't afford an average house in London.
Impossible,
It's impossible. I mean, what the average house is, what, 400,000 in London?
I would say it's probably a little bit more than that.
Okay, 450,000, 500,000, yeah. Right? Yeah. £500,000 for like a 2-bedroom, very basic apartment. And you come out of school or university laden with debt and a job that's paying you 25 grand. Yeah, I mean, the idea of owning your own home is just ridiculous.
It's impossible. And especially the way, you know, our debt-based economy works, isn't it? The Bank of England interest rates right now are, what is it, like 6.5% sort of buy to own. It's literally impossible. You know, so I think it's cheaper to rent at the moment.
So this is what I mean. So like, I mean, there's no incentive. There's no incentive to really, like, I mean, there'd be incentive to go into drugs and to do things that are criminal that you can make a quick buck on. So you got no role model. Housing is expensive.
We're being pushed into a box, and this box, the walls are tightening day by day. And what you're seeing is actually modern day slavery unfolding before your eyes, because what we were taught in school, what slavery was, that obviously doesn't exist anymore. That was abolished hundreds of years ago. Right now, this is a new form of slavery unfolding, and it is modern day slavery.
So you know what I said recently, again, I tweeted, it's not a new world order, it's a neo-feudal order.
I like that.
The elites want to be this feudal...
1 minute.
I know, they're not elites.
Don't ever use that word in my
presence. I know.
Never use
Do you know what? I don't even...
That is a real trigger word for me.
I know. You know what? I actually normally say predator class and...
Call them whatever you want.
Philanthropaths. I know they're not. But you know that group of people, they want to be the new feudal overlordship. And we are serfs. Yeah. We are just plowing the fields in our rags, barely able to feed ourselves. That's what they want.
Yeah, I mean, they're about halfway there to getting that at the moment. Everything is sort of moving in that direction in a quite orderly fashion. They've got their cards lined up. And
you know what the problem is, though? The problem is, in the past, they might have had some heavies come round with pitchforks and knives and swords and, you know, round everybody up.
There's no men to do that anymore.
No, but you know what it is, though? They've been really clever at making us create our own prisons and shackle ourselves. We apply our own chains. We apply our own handcuffs. We create our own mind prisons. And we do this happily.
Yep.
And we thank them.
Yep.
This is how ludicrous it's got.
Yep.
And I feel like shaking these people and saying, wake the frack up, you idiot. Don't you see what you're doing? And instead of the problem that I found is, instead of saying, oh yeah, you're right. What am I doing here? These evil people have hypnotized me into creating my own misery and prison. Thank you for showing me the light. No, a lot of people go, shut up. You're evil.
Don't want to accept it.
They don't want to accept it. And they round up on you then, rather than face the real enemy. How do we break that mind virus? That's the question.
What I've learned is that trying to sort of change people or trying to sort of like wake them up, what you call it's a very, very difficult, tedious thing to do. And it's almost impossible. You have to just accept people for what they are sometimes. And as sad as this is going to sound, it is almost like, you know, if you look at the animal kingdom, if an animal gets injured, then generally don't survive. And it's the law of the jungle sort of thing. You just have to accept someone. You know, if they've got a funny way of thinking, it's almost like an animal being injured, and you just have to let the animal kingdom, you know, let it unfold, and what happens. You know, there's only so much you can do as a human to sort of help other people.
Mate, it sounds cruel and cold. I'm with you.
Yeah.
I wrote a recent article on my Substack saying my target audience. And I said, some people are confused that I'm not targeting those who are not awake and not trying to wake them all up. I was like, no, my target audience is those who are already awake, to give them succor, to give them strength, to make them realize they're not alone.
I love that.
That they're not stupid,
yeah.
That they're not daft, that they're not racist, that they're not white supremacists, they're not Putin lovers. That actually, you know what? They for some reason are immune to the propaganda and the brainwashing. They have maintained their integrity and their moral core, and that they are actually right now the best of humanity. And I want them to know that, and I want them to be proud of that and keep going on and be stronger and have a louder voice and don't cower now. And you know what? Walk with your chest puffed out, head held high, and know you are in the right.
Yeah.
And then the 20, 30% who, like you said, the animal that's like going crazy, I'm not there to save them. Mate, I'm not wasting my energy, because most likely no one can save them. You know, and that's not my job. And if someone wants to do a podcast for that group of people, good luck.
Yeah.
Go do it. And hopefully with time, us who are awake to all of this, but leading by example, for those who are now going, something's not right. Little man Khan, what is he doing? What is going on? All these knife crimes. They will start being drawn to people like you and me, and our group gets bigger and bigger until we are the majority.
And you know what? One thing I love about the whole COVID pandemic thing is, you know, throughout history, you look, it's always been like, well, I say history, I say like in my lifetime, it's always like they'll take these little jabs at your, you know, pulling bricks away at your
finger. Pardon the pun, little jabs.
Yeah, little jabs. They're pulling little bricks away of your freedom. You know, you look at your house as like a brick structure, and they pull bricks away, or you know, they try to sort of push you back steps. You know, one, it's always like sort of like two steps forward, one step back, two steps forward. But with COVID, that was like one massive leap. They tried to take a big chunk out of it. And what that did is it effectively woke a lot of people. It effectively made a lot of people realize, oh, hold on 1 minute. Whoa. That's not just two steps you're trying to take there. That's, you know, that's like 50 steps. So if anything, that was almost a blessing, you know, because I felt pretty much, I'd say, alone for like a big part of my life in sort of the way I sort of view the world, my perception of the world. And now all of a sudden, it's just like, oh, wow, here we are. Here's all my people. You know, they're all a lot of people, you know, like I'm sitting here talking to you in a podcast. I don't think this would have happened if COVID didn't come around, if they didn't try to take that really big bite out of us.
100%.
Yeah.
100%. So back to the mayor thing, like there's a lot of mayors around the UK and they're very ceremonial in nature. The mayor of London, you know, came about, it's got quite a punchy thing. I mean, you've got a big remit. What is the actual budget of the mayor of London office? And what is the main remit? I mean, is it transport, the tube, buses, all that kind of stuff? What else falls under the mayor of London jurisdiction?
So the budget basically increases every year. It's formed from several different sort of areas of revenue. So to speak, you know, it's got like central government funded, it's got sort of areas of revenue coming from TfL, etc.
That's transport for London, so yeah, the metro system and all that for London. Yeah.
You know, you've got council tax, business rates, things like that. The budget this year has been set to, I think it's just a little bit under £21 billion.
What the hell?
Yeah, £21 billion. It's not, you know, we're talking a lot of money here.
That's like $30 billion. That's a lot of money. Like
that, yeah.
And what does it go on?
So yeah, like you said, the areas of transport, we've got transport, we've got policing and crime, we've got health, we've got culture, we've got arts. There's a lot of areas of policy which the mayor sort of controls. Some would argue that the mayor has too much power. In fact, some would actually argue that the mayor has even more power than the actual prime minister does. It is a massive power. And they are effectively sort of answerable to no one.
Yeah. Wow. And when you centralize power, you make it easy to corrupt individuals and influence them.
Yeah.
Don't you?
There is a very sort of clear hierarchy, this sort of structure, and the mayor is sitting right at the top of every sort of area of policy. You know, you look at like one, for example, like the policing and crime. You know, the mayor doesn't just influence the police or have a slight control over the police. The mayor is fully responsible for the police. He is the head of police, the head commissioner of police.
What, in Scotland, of Scotland Yard?
Of Scotland Yard, yeah, the Metropolitan Police. He is the head of the Metropolitan Police.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
You know what?
There's a lot of, the mayor has a massive amount of power.
What's the saying? Ultimate power corrupts ultimately.
Little man Khan, I'm telling you, he's got a very strong case of little man syndrome. The power has got to his head.
Right, okay. So let's talk about little man Khan. What is it about him that you don't like and that people shouldn't like? What's wrong with him?
The main thing with him is that he just does what he wants, does not listen to anyone.
He doesn't, does he?
Imposes these authoritarian policies on people with almost no consultation with experts, no consultation with Londoners. Londoners will be screaming, saying, we do not want this. He'll just go ahead and do it anyway.
Didn't he advocate some policy, this 10-minute city business, 15-minute, you know, something, and he got some policy written up by one person who worked in some university, and it's all climate change agenda business. I mean, what I'm trying to say is it was so biased. It's like, hey, I need a paper justifying what I'm planning on doing. Can you just write something up? I mean, that's the kind of garbage we're looking at. It was not,
is it Ullage you're talking about?
Yeah, it's not scientific. It's
not at all. It was so bad. Ullage was literally the most, where to start? I'll explain. So basically, it was the data was gathered by Imperial College.
That's it.
Yeah, Imperial College London. So
it's funny, the same people that were involved with the whole COVID business, remember? The modelling?
Yeah. So they were instructed to gather data to form this new policy. They went and gathered this data. So they monitored the air quality in London, in three different locations. So when we say air quality, we're talking about particulate matter 2.5 and nitrogen dioxide. So they monitored the air quality at three different locations in London.
Mm.
One of those locations was just outside the Blackwall Tunnel. Another location was just outside a tube station. The air quality coming from the tube network is actually causing a lot of air pollution. That is where the sort of one of the main contribution to the poor air quality in London. You know, if we set aside the airlines. So already you can see this is very biased data.
It is.
Yeah. As you can imagine, the data came back. Imperial College basically analysed that data. And then what little man Khan went and did is he just went and decided to
quash the research.
Yeah. He just basically decided to sort of conclude this data in a way that he allowed him to sort of, well, basically give him that sort of backing from the public at the time to impose Ullage's policy.
I've got it here right now. BBC News, yes. 21st of August, 2023. Ullage, London mayor accused of quashing research, questioning the scheme.
It was a statistical construct. And Imperial College London have actually admitted this now. They've said it. He basically claims that the poor air quality was contributing to up to 4,000 deaths per year in London.
Look at this. On November 2021, Miss Rodriguez told Prof Kelly she was deeply concerned about the damage this misleading study is doing, both to our credibility and to low emission zones as a policy instrument.
Yeah, so it was an out-and-out lie.
Is there anything you can do or advise to help us set the record straight? I bet you they didn't.
He just went ahead and did it anyway.
Prof Kelly agreed to issue a statement that read, the actions of the mayor's office, including the introduction of the ULES, collectively are providing a major benefit. How's that? What?
Yeah, so
Then they amended the statement saying get rid of collectively, but they still kept with the has dramatically reduced air pollution.
It hasn't.
In February 2023, Ms. Rodriguez again emailed Prof Kelly asking him whether he could write to the Daily Telegraph to challenge some of the misunderstanding. So it seems like Prof Kelly is in on it.
Yeah, a lot of the media outlets, they're massive contributors.
So he's a professor, director of Imperial's Environmental Research Group. Now, I've talked a lot about this with, you know, the scientists, the corruption of science. Science is all about money and conflicts of interest. Do you think that professor, who is, his job is about environmental, you know, all that kind of, the environment, green agenda, do you think he's going to say, oh yeah, our research shows that actually this doesn't make any difference? Or he's going to be like, yeah, like we need to... Conflicts of interest are rampant.
Rampant.
It's like, for example, I don't know if you know, JCVI, the Joint Committee of Vaccine, whatever. The people on that committee are researchers in vaccines and vaccine developers.
They're being paid by Big Pharma.
You're getting the fox to guard the chicken coop.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously, if you've got a JCVI, you've got a panel deciding whether to give vaccines or not, whether they're safe or not, whether children should have them or not, whether pregnant people... People like you should be on that panel.
Impartiality just doesn't exist.
Totally impartial people should be on that panel weighing up the information, the risks, the benefits, the pros, the cons, and then judging, right, actually, yeah, we should go ahead. No, this doesn't make sense. No, you don't get people who have a vested interest in that area or field to make the decisions. But it's not just vaccines. It's now everywhere. We have a massive corruption permeating through our society. So let's go back to me being a little Pakistani kid, right? Born and brought up in Glasgow. I used to go to Pakistan, right, as a kid on holiday. And I'd be like, why can't we just be like any other family? Like, look, they're off to Mallorca. They're off to like Paris, France, south of France, Ibiza. And we're going to Karachi, where there's no electricity. There's malaria, mosquitoes. And funny toilets, right? and inevitable food poisoning. And you know, one of the things you would always be like, man, the roads suck, the corruption is rampant. And you'd come back home and you'd be so glad. The best part of, you know, the best part of the holiday was coming back home. Right? Like I'd come back from holidays and my friends would be like, oh yeah, we went to Disneyland in Florida. What did you do? And I'd be like, I went to Karachi. Oh, that's really exciting. What do you see? My uncle's living room. I mean, like, we didn't even go out and do... I mean, it was just, like, it wasn't great, man. I'm telling you right now, the roads here now are worse than what I remember the roads being like in Pakistan. The potholes are crazy. The traffic, the way people drive, the inefficiency, not getting appointments, the corruption in our, you know, in our political system... The backhanders that people are getting, it's just really bad. It's sad seeing in front of my eyes over the last 40 years, this decline in the West. Yeah. It makes my heart weep.
And what you'll find is that the very best, I think I've said this already once, this podcast, but the very best any politician or person in power is offering right now is a managed decline of these things. That is the very best we can expect in every single area. Central government, city hall, you know. Most of them are offering something far more like nefarious and worse than that. But the very best we can accept right now is a managed decline.
That's not good enough.
That's not good enough.
No. All right, listen, look, I don't believe in Trump, just for the record. But for those who do, they're like, look, Trump came in and look, he came in. But even Trump couldn't do anything. Now, I personally think Trump didn't do anything because he's part of the problem. He's an actor. He was playing a role, just like Bojo was. They needed right-wing people to come in to install the lockdowns and all the harsh, draconian, you know, because if it wasn't, if you had leftist people, then the right wing would have been like, how dare you take away our freedoms and liberties? We had the right-wing parties inflicting this Marxist things on us, this collectivism. Now, but the argument still holds that, you know, you go in, just you and maybe, you know, like me. Just remember, don't forget me, right? And your little team. How much change can you really make with the whole machinery? You still got the woke civil servants, the woke indoctrinated people. They will be trying to backstab you everywhere. They're going to try and trip you up left, right, and center. The media is going to want to crucify you. Are you really sure you want this job? And are you really going to be able to change anything fundamentally?
I like the fact that you mentioned Trump because you know, whatever your opinions on him or whatever, there is actually one very small thing that I'm sort of stealing from him.
Oh, yeah, what's that?
In my campaign. So if you look back to when he was elected president, one of the, you know, one of the things that actually sort of put a halt to him doing what he wanted to do is that when he got into the White House, the sort of unelected staff within the White House was a big problem for him. They created a barrier, you know, they were against him. So he got into power and wasn't pretty much able to do anything he wanted to do. So one thing he's doing this time with his campaign, and this is what I'm sort of going to steal from him. It's an amazing idea. He's already created his entire panel of staff of his own people. So when he gets in, immediately he's sacking everybody.
You're sacking everybody?
Everybody.
Oh man, I love that.
Yeah, yeah. It's an amazing idea. So he's sacking everybody.
I'm going to email you my CV tonight.
Good idea, honestly, serious. So yeah, he's sacking everyone and installing his staff in there. And that is something we've already started doing. Rallying up the troops, rallying up the staff, because, you know, if I get in there, I need to be able to do what I want to do. And if I've got all of Little Man Khan's staff still sitting in there, it's going to be a problem.
Yeah, man.
So what I'll do is, literally on day one, I'll get in there, we're going to have a meeting. Everyone can just choose right now. Are you with me or are you against me?
No. Just sack them all. Mate, you know, can I be honest with you? Honestly, let me tell you something. You will not fail because of outside forces. You will fail because of people within.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry, but when you say to people, are you with me or are you out? And they're thinking, oh my God, I'm going to lose my job and my cushy salary. They're going to lie and say, yeah, I'm with you. You know?
I like to give people chances.
I don't. I'm joking.
I like to give people chances. You know, I believe there's good and bad in everyone, you know. Someone that was with Sadiq Khan and realized, you know, he's not the one, you know. If I get in there and then they realize, you know what, this guy, I could work with this guy.
How will we know if you've been compromised and taken over? What will be the tell? How will you let us all subtly know, right? Do you know what? You can't trust me anymore. I mean, you can't publicly say it, you know, for whatever reason. But if they do come for you, what are you going to tell us?
You'll know instantly.
Because the Ukraine flag will be flying on top of it.
That's a good one. I'll be in prison. I'll be in prison. I am uncontrollable. No man can ever hold anything.
All right, okay. Yeah, that's great. Okay, but listen. You got a young family. You got a third one on the way. What happens if they threaten your kids?
They better just come for me, because it's gonna be all out war. Then anyone comes for my family, that is, I don't need to tell you. You're a father yourself.
Yeah, man, 100%. I think the key thing is we can't live in fear.
You can't, man. You can't.
I'll tell you one thing, because people say this to me. Oh, you know, you need to be quiet. You need to be careful. I'm like, no, you don't know who you're dealing with.
A parent who feels their children in danger is the most dangerous living creature on this planet Earth. I mean, if someone wants to take me there, I can only pray to God I never get to that situation.
Yeah.
Because, you know, that is my world on the line there.
Right, listen. What I'm going to ask, I'm going to say something. I've got a lot of listeners here in London. A lot of listeners who are around about London. Listen, if you don't love this man now, well, you never will. But I'm hoping you do love this man. And what I want you all to do is send at least 5 people this podcast and say, you need to vote for this man. And every single one of those other people then need to send the same podcast again to another 5 people and spread that ripple effect and get as many people to know about Andreas Mickley.
That was a good one. I like that.
And vote for him, right? That's what I want them to do. What would you want people to do now?
That's all I can ask right now, is just to keep spreading the awareness, sharing the posts. We're getting, honestly, right now, I feel like we're a snowball rolling down the top of the mountain, and every day it's just growing and growing, because the second we turn into that avalanche, we're going to be unstoppable. And I truly believe that with my heart. Right now, there's a massive appetite for something different. People have had enough of the uni-party system. They want something different. They really feel it, and they just don't know. They can't put a finger on where it is. And honestly, I wouldn't be doing this if I didn't believe it wasn't me that is that what where what they want.
I believe in you. I believe in you. Say like, say you don't get it this time round. Will you go for it again in 4 years' time? Knowing the toll it's taken on you?
Honestly, I would probably say no. I'm trying this. Like I said to you at the start of this, I'm trying something new here. You know, this is my me changing up the game. You know, I've always been on the defense. This is me trying something new, attacking. I'll try anything once. Because before I've done this, there's a lot of people there. Probably, you know, have this that same mindset. They just truly believe the political system is too corrupt.
What I would say is, mate, if you get a big chunk, say you come 3 or 4, you should hang in there. That's the momentum, mate.
Yeah.
No, seriously.
All I can ask is that whether I win...
Don't do a Ross Perot. You need to keep going, mate.
Whether I take City Hall or not, all I can hope for, and I truly believe this will happen, is that others will follow in my footsteps. I truly believe this is the rise of the independents, because that's what we need right now. And I'm not just talking about City Hall. I'm talking about local MPs. We just need to rid the political party system. It needs to be gone. All we need is the rise of the independents, and we will take back power of this country. This whole system will be ours.
Mate.
And there'll be nothing they can do about that. They'll try their very best to prevent it. I'm telling you, all I can ask for, this is, like I said, the rise of the independents. If it just keeps happening, they'll lose in the end.
100%.
So it's like a numbers game.
Mate, it's not just independent politicians. I talk about this all the time. We need independent doctors. You know, I was working in the private sector. I thought I was independent. I was still beholden to these hospitals. The problem is, like, if you don't have doctors or journalists or politicians who are truly independent, then they're not going to be they're not going to be really ultimately doing what's really in your best interest. They're not going to be delivering the news, the real news,
100%.
Or treating you as you should be treated. They'll be thinking, right, I need to follow the protocols and guidelines, because if I don't, my hospital is going to get upset with me, and the managers will have a word with me, and I'll get pulled up by my regulatory body, or the journalists will be like, oh, if I don't do this, you know, my editor's not going to give me any work. I might get sacked. We need independent journalists. We need independent doctors. We need independent politicians.
With morals and integrity. And that right there is power.
Strong man, strong woman.
Yep.
I'm married to a strong woman. I do. We do jiu-jitsu together. She loves choking me out. It's really great couples therapy.
That sounds fun.
It is so much fun. So much fun. I have to admit, I kind of let her win sometimes, just because I think it's good for her.
I won't tell her you said that.
Do not tell her I said that. Do not tell her. Right, listen. You're on your deathbed. You've reached, you know, 150, surrounded by your loved ones and your family.
150. Wow. Okay.
Yeah. You'll get there. And before you die, meet your maker. What advice would you give to your loved ones all around you?
Which ones?
All your loved ones.
Just all of them.
Yeah, together. Your kids, your grandkids. What are you going to, wisdom will you impart on them before you go away?
I guess it's what I like to say to the youth is, time is the most valuable currency in the world. Forget about money, forget about possessions, forget about all of these things. Time is everything, because when it's up and it's done. You know, I've got a Russian friend, and he said it's a Russian saying, there's no coffin in the world with pockets. You can't take, you know, your possessions and your money with you, because it's meaningless. Once you're gone, you're gone. Spend your time wisely. It is your most valuable currency. Everything in life is about your experiences and your connections with people. And what you do in this life and what you don't do is all that matters.
Ah, bro. I love you, man. I definitely would vote for you. I'm on Team Andreas. I mean that. Listen, thank you so much for coming. That's an hour and a half. It flew by.
It did, didn't it? Mate, I want that CV, by the way. Yeah.
Dude, definitely. I mean, look, you need to get home now, get some sleep. I'm sure you're back up and on the road very early tomorrow. Yeah, and sleep is very important.
It is.
I really, really wish you all the best. When is the election?
2nd of May.
2nd of May. What day is it today?
Tuesday. Oh, the date. I think we're the 9th today, aren't we?
I'm going
to... Days are merging into one another.
I'm going to upload this podcast tonight.
Amazing. Wow.
Right. I need to say a big apology to Montgomery Tom. His podcast was meant to come out tomorrow.
You're pushing me to the front of the queue.
Actually, there's a 6-week wait.
Oh, wow.
Mate.
Oh, wow. Honestly.
Do you know, I'm booking into June. I kid you not. I'll show you on my phone. I'm booking into June. I squeezed you in because I really wanted your voice out there. I'm not making you. I'm going to post this tomorrow.
Wow. You know what? I had my friend on the tour bus today, Ramis. He said he's coming up to see you soon.
Yeah.
He was out with me today.
He's a good man as well.
I love Ramis. I love him. You're going to have a good conversation with him.
Yeah, I will. But listen, I've had a fantastic conversation with you. You're a really good human being. I have a lot of respect for you, and I wish you all the best. And God bless you, buddy. Thank you so much.
Likewise, Doc Manic. Thank you.